ghosts, specters, whatever you want to call them, they've been around for thousands of years.
Apparently she died from a tooth infection in one of the upstairs rooms in the house.
As in the locations they haunt. History of a Haunting podcast tells you all about these famous, infamous, and almost famous locations, and why they became terrifying places to visit. Grab a glass of wine and settle in with your hosts, Archie.
I mean, that was definitely the wrong thing to do.
And Carrie.
Nobody asked for it, Carrie.
Nobody fucking asked for it, but hey, my podcast, and I'll say what I fucking want.
Two people just winging it in life, and this podcast. So enjoy this week's episode of History of a Haunting.
Hi guys, welcome to History of a Haunting. I'm Carrie.
I'm Archie.
And I'm Laura.
Oh, Laura doesn't sound like a guy again today. Good job.
Oh,
two
good
shows in a row.
Listen, the hormones have finally worn off.
I don't know what the hell that was. Did you listen to it?
Yeah, it was weird. And I think it was the sound. Remember when I had an issue with my computer with the sound when we were doing something for work?
I think
it was that too.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, so in the Patreon episode, the conspiracy theory, she was, what voice were you doing? You were talking in ASMR or something?
ASMR voice.
And the recording stuck. And she was talking in a deep voice the entire episode. And I kept saying, what the hell is wrong with your voice?
Welcome to History of a Haunting. This is your host, Laura.
Oh, God.
An ASMR.
No. See, that's much
now
better.
Now it'll be stuck again.
Right? But the last time, it just stuck, and it was terrible. And it was a whole episode. I was, kept trying to play with it, and at one point she sounded like Mickey Mouse, and I was screwing with the audio. I'm like, I can't leave it like that. I guess we'll just have to go with it.
I'm surprised you didn't. You're like, this is going to make it 10 times funnier.
10 times funnier. So funny. Because she actually said some really profound things in it. So in that voice, it really, when you were talking about the Glasgow smile, I was like, no, that'll haunt people's nightmares. Anyway. Right. Before we get to the episode, I have just one EVP to go over. And you guys already know about it. I had sent it to you. But when we had done the Pittock Smith Mansion, we couldn't figure out or really decide on how that should be pronounced. And mm-hmm. One of our lovely listeners named Aaron messaged us on Instagram to let us know that it is Pittock Mansion. So thank you so much, Aaron. We are very appreciative. So now we have two Aarons that we can say. Aarons, plural,
Aaron,
write that down. Aarons, look that up, write that down. So that's really all I had about for EVPs this week. And for my week, it was a very slow week until today. Today at work was a little shitstormy crazy. And my home loan is now conditionally approved by underwriting. So I'll be closing on my loan in less than 2 weeks. And we finally move out of this damn hotel and into our mansion, which is not really a mansion, but to us it is because the six of us in one hotel room is a little snug. I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it. Zero stars.
Oh.
Zero stars. Even Koi is like, I miss my room. I'm like, the dogs are sick of being so close together. It's like Chewy used to sleep on the living room couch away from Tater and Leia. And now he's like, there's nowhere to go. Like everyone is everywhere. Yeah. So we're all really kind of coming to the end of our tether, but less than 2 weeks now. So that's what I've got. What do you guys have? How are you? How are your weeks?
My week was pretty boring. Although I have to say the highlight of it was coming home from work today.
Because it was Friday?
Friday, and every Leadfoot's wet dream was not a single red light all the way home. It was great. Oh, my God.
So exciting.
Oh, yay. It was so awesome.
Did you post?
Yes.
Did you post about it on Facebook?
No.
You should.
No, I'm thinking about it.
All right, Laura, we'll be looking for that in a couple hours.
Right, exactly.
You know he will.
He will.
Yeah, if he stubs his toe, he posts about it on Facebook.
That's right. With photos, by the way.
By the way, Archie, my mom was highly disturbed. She was like, tell Archie to quit posting pictures of his toe.
No one needs to see that, but that should be.
Oh, yeah. I was purely for the people that would be grossed out by it.
Success.
Yes.
You've won.
You won. Laura, how was your week?
Pretty good. I have been trying to reorganize the house. And so, as I told you, I bought some new like Lego storage devices for all the stray Legos that are strewn everywhere and seem to find a way into every nook and crevice and possible place in my home that I fucking step on all the time. And I really, if they weren't so expensive, I would suck them all up in the vacuum or just throw them all away. But so I'm just throwing them all into this bin. But the Legos are running my life right now. Just trying to organize that is literally taking so much time. Even going to Zane's room and I keep starting and then I'm like, fuck it. And I walk out. It's too much. It's too much.
I get overwhelmed.
And I'm like, I'm done.
I can't do this today.
Right? I'm like having a mental breakdown.
I haven't lived my whole life up to this point to sort Legos.
I mean,
it's so crazy the amount of stuff. Like, and he loves them, so that's what he gets all the time for, you know, birthdays and Christmas and what have you. So, or if he gets, you know, with his allowance, if we go to Target or something, that's what he'll buy. So it's, you know, between books and Legos, that's like, and Hot Wheels, that's like cars. It's like all he has anymore. He really enjoys it.
Oh, and planes. Like a thousand ways to die in Zane's room is what it sounds like.
It really is. It's like, what small thing can I start to collect that my mother can hurt her foot on?
Mm-hmm.
Like he judges these things based on that.
Well, I don't mean to bring you down because I know you have a glimmer of hope that one day this won't be your life, but it will. Because as we move into the house, your Lego story reminded me, oh shit, I got to get shelving for Koi's Lego sets because they won't all fit on top of his entertainment center. And I'm like, yeah, Laura, this is your life forever. So today's episode it's a really great haunted location, but its history is really horribly awful. So it was kind of like prolonging the EVPs to delay the inevitable, but Arch, why don't you tell Laura and the people where we're taking them today?
Okie dokie, everybody. We are going to St. Albans Sanatorium in Radford, Virginia, USA.
Have you heard of this, Laura?
I believe I have.
Yay!
Yay, one for me.
Watch, we hit into this, and she's like, actually, I was thinking of something else. I've never heard of this crazy place. Entirely possible. All right. Well, Arch, why don't you jump right in?
Jump right in. All right. I got all of my information from abandonedspacesandcolonialghosts.com.
Oh my God. He used two. This must be a record.
And I used a ghost story site for the history portion.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. It actually had a pretty detailed history, more than the other site that I was looking at.
It really did. I got my stuff from it too.
Oh, I'm sure you did. It's a good resource.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, shall I just jump right in? All right, well, let me get ready. I have to take a sip for this one.
That was a slurp. You're going to make me edit that shit out.
All right. Years before this institution was even built, the land upon which it rested belonged to the members of three native tribes known as Shawnee, Cherokee, and the Powhatan. The land itself is filled with blood and horror from times when different people fought for the right to live there. It was its relative closeness to the New River watershed that made the native tribes and the early European settlers to hate each other and present each group with their own weapon. Naturally, the natives had their tomahawks, and the members of the Shawnee tribe, in a gruesome manner, demonstrated what this piece of the earth really meant to them. In 1755, with no hesitation, they attacked the Draper's Meadow colonists. The natives went as far and ghastly as they could in the massacre. One of the people killed by the tribesmen was Philip Barger, one of those two. They put the old man's decapitated head in a bag and gave it to a woman named Mrs. Lybrook, telling her that inside she would find an old friend. The rest of the colonists ended up as hostages. And good Lord, Carrie, we could do a whole episode on the Draper's Meadow massacre. It's obscene.
I touch on a little bit more in my part, yeah.
Okay, good. Because, I mean, I had to look it up, and the Wikipedia page is just mortifying.
I got some of my information from that one, too. It's not a great story.
No.
Which is so different for our podcast.
I know. Usually
it's all so uplifting.
motivational.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you can do this. The ghosts are watching you, but go ahead.
it's all bad. All bad. Bad. It's bad.
We get it. The horrors that happened upon and for this land are numerous. Scalping and decapitating are just part of the violent history of this place. Fortunately, my portion skips over about a century of it. And we continue on in 1892. I didn't find a lot of details in the time between. I don't know if you're going to touch on that, Carrie.
No, not really. I'm just going to touch on the really disgusting, horrible parts, so it's fine.
Oh, okay, good. So as I said, a century passed until 1892. The buildings that would later become the St. Albans Sanatorium came into existence as a Lutheran boys' school. Its founder, George W. Miles, expected the boys to one day leave this school as gentlemen. The boys were expected to perform well in everything, which meant that the competitiveness among them would soon reach epic proportions. The ways of this school were quite different to any other, actually. It was a place where bullying was sort of rewarded, and as a result, homicides and suicides became a part of the history of the place. When George W. Miles left this earth and headed towards, quote, greener pastures, the school began to lose its reputation and finally closed its doors in 1911.
I think he went toward hellfire.
Most likely. And I think I left out some of the descriptors of the rooms in this school just because I knew you were going to cover it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds a little bit like a Lord of the Flies kind of reformatory.
That's the impression that I got.
Yeah, like,
you know, and there are some schools. Yeah, there are some schools that are sort of like this. Like, I think My Favorite Murder did an episode not too long ago. I think it was like sometime in September or October last year, about a school that just recently closed down that was very much like this, where like bullying was sort of the way of life. And if you wanted to not be bullied, you had to bully the younger classmen.
Where hazing is just part of what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's just life at the school. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, after the school closed its doors in 1911, Dr. John C. King used $500 out of his own pocket and another $16,000 of borrowed funds to purchase the land, including the buildings of the former school. He quickly renovated the structures, and on January 15th, 1916, the St. Albans Sanatorium was ready for its first patients. If one was to consult the brochures about this institution, in it he or she would find a neat description of this place, such as, quote, diversional exercises and employment, vegetable and flower gardens, and an adequate dairy herd, end quote.
Nothing about a piggery?
No piggery, I don't think so.
What a dumb.
I don't like it. Let's do something else.
Yeah, right. Change it. Let's default to next week's episode. Go, Arch.
Forget this fucking place. I'm done.
No, piggery. God damn it.
I'm out.
In its early days, the sanatorium had some financial troubles, but Dr. King refused to give up. With the support of his wife, he further expanded the hospital and its services. The growth of the population from nearby settlements rose, and this meant that the patient number followed proportionally. Given the fact that this sanatorium was the only hospital in the area, the St. Albans Sanitarium also offered general medical care. The hospital staff worked 6 days a week and lived on the hospital's property.
Hey, that's what Laura and I do.
Unhappy.
And just start, I'm just going to hang like a little sign above my computer area that says Laura's Sanatorium. Kind of feels like that.
Right. Where the piggery. No piggery.
No piggery.
Right. The inmates are running it.
But they really are. Mutiny has fucking happened. The Legos are winning the war. A bunch of bullshit over here.
Well, unhappy with the conditions at the Southwestern Lunatic Asylum during his stint as superintendent, Dr. King wanted to open an institution where patients would both be well-treated and well-accommodated. Thus, he made several renovations to the school's remnants, even adding the farm to the property to give patients a proper place to exercise and play. Unfortunately, just as Miles' school didn't produce the gentleman he wanted, neither would King's St. Albans Sanatorium deliver his goal of high recoveries. The history, as we know, of psychiatric treatment methods during the 1900s is a story of failures replacing failures. Insulin-induced comas and lobotomies would leave patients either brain dead or completely dead, for example.
Completely dead?
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of that line.
Or DED dead.
Yeah. Reminds me of the line in Wizard of Oz. She is really most sincerely dead. Not that we're laughing at the people that died, but it just the way Archie said it was really funny.
Yeah, and I wrote that line myself.
It was great. I loved it.
These procedures were also very labor intensive, as St. Albans staff to patient ratio in 1945 was a sad 48 to 6,509.
That's a little beyond sad.
Yeah, that's criminal.
Yeah, that's
we have lots
unmanageable.
Yeah.
That's like, why bother levels?
Right. I mean, you do know in Arizona, we have like 30, I think it's even over 30 now, kids that they're allowed to do to one teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something. It's along those lines. And kids are crazy.
Yeah. I don't bless their hearts. Aunt Marilee, we love you.
Vote for teacher raises.
Mm-hmm. When cutting people's skulls open proved ineffective, doctors opted.
Are we talking about teachers again, or
no?
We're back on the hospital.
Oh my god!
Okay, I was confused. We were talking about teachers in one breath, and then you're like, "Well, cutting people's skulls open didn't work."
When cutting people's skulls open proved ineffective, doctors opted to simply shock them to their senses. Schizophrenics, for instance, were given electroconvulsive therapy, which was deemed safer than insulin coma therapy. Still, ECT still had many possible dangerous after effects, including fractures, severe memory loss, and spontaneous seizures. Don't even get me started about the hydrotherapy.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that was a rabbit hole, its own sad, sad little thing. In all its first 30 years, the hospital dealt with more than 6,000 patients, and it continued to grow in the decades that followed. New outpatient clinics that opened in the 1960s caused the sanatorium to gain in popularity even further. Two decades later, it was time for an upgrade, and the hospital was relocated to a new and more modern $8 million building. In the 1990s, the Carilion Health System acquired St. Albans Sanitarium, but vacated the property in 2003. After a brief stint as an abandoned site, St. Albans got the attention of Tim Gregory, a previous patient at the hospital. As the property's new owner, he made it his mission to renovate its remaining buildings and transform it into a, quote, research and enlightenment center. Today, to fund these efforts, he hosts a number of macabre events at the St. Albans Sanatorium, including an annual haunted house Halloween extravaganza. As guests roam through the building, they encounter zombies and mental patients, but can't always be sure if they are staged or real.
And that is where the ghosts come in.
And that is my...
Nice.
Carrie?
Good job, Arch.
That was a really good job.
As usual.
Thank you.
And I actually had listened to a podcast about it where they said that the owner... Wait, what did he call it? He wanted it to be a research and enlightenment center?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because he wanted people to know and understand what patients went through when they were there, when they were actually there. Mm-hmm. Which I thought is just another one of those, you know, good intentions thing, like all of these places were. You know what I mean? Like,
No, he wants people to know what terrible things happened there.
Yeah. So, we are going to take a quick break. Please listen to this wonderful promo from one of our dearest podcast buddies, Caleb, and his amazingly wonderful podcast, The Paranormal Burrito. We will be right back. And
Caleb!
So enjoy the promo, because I'm going to bring us all down hard and fast.
Hey there, everyone. Are you looking for a new podcast with general spooky goings-on and a focus on interview-style paranormal stories? Well, then you should be following The Paranormal Burrito. We're a weekly podcast that does a new interview every week where people generally tell me their ghost stories. If this sounds interesting to you, please subscribe to The Paranormal Burrito on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Here's a sample for you now.
And it was evil, and I could just feel the evil emanating it from it, and it was terrifying to me. I was terrified.
Please listen to The Paranormal Burrito wherever you get podcasts.
Okay. So, I got my stuff from colonialghosts.com, wikipedia.com, paraholics.com, jennyhayek.org. It was a blog. It was a really good blog. And then also Destination Fear, their episode they did on St. Albans. And then, and that's why we drinks podcast on the episode, on the location. All right. So in the 1900s, the mentally ill, like Archie had said, they were basically lab rats for doctors who were more eager to test out experimental procedures on them. And I really liked the sentence that you had used, Archie, which was failure upon failure, which is really what it was. Mm-hmm. So as a result, the dead usually outnumbered the living in early sanatoriums and asylums. Those who weren't killed during some pilot medical trial usually just chose to off themselves. So depressing was kind of the norm in these hospital environments, how leading to, of course, many of these old institutions to be rumored to be haunted. But only one has actually beaten out other types of paranormally busy sites to become known as the most active location on the East Coast, which is St. Albans Sanatorium. The hospital's haunted story, like Archie mentioned, actually begins before it was even built, which Archie conveniently left out the worst of.
As I am wont to do.
Right. So kind of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Archie talked about the Draper Colony massacre. And one of the women that was there that day that I'm going to talk a little bit about was Mary Draper Ingalls. She was one of the survivors of that massacre. She was actually one of the people held for ransom at the Shawneetown of Sonotio. I'm probably saying that wrong. Sonon Tio, sorry to the Shawnee tribe. Before she was taken prisoner, she first had to witness the gruesome deaths of her fellow colonists, which included her mother and her sister-in-law's baby. Though there are actually variations in what she saw, pretty much every account is gross and bloody. Basically, her mother was tomahawked and scalped, and her sister-in-law's infant child was brained against one of the side, or the side against the side of one of the cabins. They took 5 captives, including Mary and her 2 sons, her sister-in-law, whose baby was killed, and her neighbor, Henry Leonard. Mary's husband was actually nearly killed, but he fled into the forest. So while she was prisoner, she sewed shirts using cloth traded to the Indians by French traders. She was paid in goods for her work. A newspaper account stated that she was also assigned to attend the Indians as a servant and stretch the skins that they might procure. So she was doing work around just kind of working around the little area where they were living. While she was working at a place called Big Bone Lick, which she was making salt licks for the meat that they would brine. And this was in late October 1755. So now, Arch, didn't you say that the massacre happened in July of that year?
I think just 1755.
Oh, okay.
I can't wait till we go to YouTube and you can see the deer in headlights look that Arch just gave.
Asking me to check my own. What?
The teacher just fucking called on his ass and he was like, wait, what? Zach.
Every time. I don't know why he doesn't keep his notes up because I always do it. I'm always like, now, Arch, refresh my memory, blah, blah, blah. And he's like,
What episode is it? It's just behind the Zoom screen. And then I have to find the sentence in the list. I thought I was done.
Yeah. Carrie's always
going to ask more. My turn is over.
Yeah. Carrie's always going to ask more stupid questions. Just listen the first time, bitch.
He's not wrong.
I mean, really. He's not. So anyway, in October of 1755, Mary persuaded another captive woman referred to as the old Dutch woman, but this woman may actually have been German, to escape with her. The next day, they asked permission of the Indians to go into the forest to gather wild grapes, and they took off, retracing the route the Indians had followed after Mary was taken captive in, here it is, July.
Oh, okay.
So these women, man, let me tell you, they kind of, they came across a cabin and then it was like dried corn. So they stayed there for a couple of days and they took the corn with them. They lived on black walnuts, wild grapes, sassafras leaves, blackberries, frogs. But once the weather got colder, they were forced to eat dead animals that they found along the way. On a couple of occasions, they saw Indians hunting and they managed to avoid being seen. And then on one occasion, they were actually able to obtain deer meat from a kill abandoned by one of the Indian hunters. But here's where it gets a little macabre. By now, the temperature had dropped even further, and it was starting to snow, and the two women were starting to become weaker from starvation. At some point, the old Dutch woman became, quote, very disheartened and discouraged, and tried to kill Mary. she managed to keep the woman in good humor by promising her a sum of money to be paid by her father-in-law upon their safe return to Draper's Meadow. But as soon as they got to the mouth of the new river, the old Dutch woman again tried to take Mary's life around the end of November, but Mary got loose and outran her. A New York Mercury article stated that the Dutch woman attempted to kill her again in order, as it was supposed, to eat her, because she was so hungry.
Oh, wow.
But after another struggle, she was able to free herself and she fled. She eventually made it back to her colony and her husband and had another 5 children. So one of her children was actually died because it was her and her two boys that were captured by the Indians. And one of them died. The other one was, when she escaped, she left him there. And he was raised by them until he was 17. And he spoke fluent Shawnee. He didn't, like, he was completely acclimated to the culture. He had to be recolonized, I think is what they called it. So he ended up going, being sent back to them. But it was, he wasn't obviously the same at all. And then she and her husband, after she came back, had another five children. So that was that.
pretty effectively told the whole story.
That's so interesting, though. It's a really interesting story.
It's,
I'm surprised they haven't made a movie about this. Like, what is happening?
Oh, and they probably, should. I mean, Roanoke was a thing. That's probably what happened at Roanoke, is that they were captured by the natives and integrated into the Native American society.
That's probably what happened, yeah. Because, I mean, that dude was gone for like 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like he was gone for 2 days and then just poof, they were gone. It was 4 years.
Right, yeah. Yeah, sometimes you learn to live a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm just easing you into the crazy. Now, let's talk about the boys' school.
Oh.
Goddamn.
Oh, God, that bothered me. That was such a hard read for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not going to get better.
I even know what's coming.
Yeah. So the students, it seems, were separated into very two distinctive groups, like Archie had touched on, the athletic and essentially the worthless, or the more cerebral. So the kids that were, you know, weren't into big into athletics, like me and Archie and Coy and basically all of my friends.
Hey, no.
All of my real friends.
I totally would have hazed you guys.
Oh my God, 1,000%.
All my real friends. The fake one.
Yeah.
I'd be out there playing tennis.
I'm really not friends with athletes. I can't stand them.
Fuck off.
Anyway, so apparently those that were not worthy of playing a sport on one of the highly competitive teams within the school were often bullied, resulting in many suicides and unexplained deaths. And, you know, you would think that would be where I'd end it, but it's not. So it was, again, very much a place where boys were pitted against boys. A caption of a boy in the yearbook, the boy had committed suicide, and a caption of him in the yearbook, because he was considered to be one of those more cerebral kids than athletic. This yearbook caption of him read, quote, E. Blackburn Runyon did not return after Christmas, much to our sorrow, as it put a stop to the football games on the terrace in which he figured prominently as the football.
Oh, seems pretty accurate.
Was the yearbook. Oh, God.
Yeah. Like, I went to an all-girls Catholic school, but we didn't have, obviously, the hazing. But a lot of my really good guy friends, even in the 90s, went to, I mean, this is in the 1990s, went to all boys schools.
Back in the 1900s, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, back in the 1900s.
It wasn't great in the 1900s. Everything was hard.
It was very hard. The wagons, not very fast. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. The TV, not in color. The pagers, do you know how hard it is to spell boobs upside down? It's fucking hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so my guy friends that went to like all boys Catholic schools, they had a hard time because the hazing was still like quite a bit happening there.
Yeah.
I mean, of course it wasn't sanctioned.
Sure.
But yeah, the older guys would obviously pick on the younger and the weaker boys. Like it was bad. And they would tell me stories.
I mean, and every now and then you hear a story in the news about a kid that was hazed at a college in some fraternity bullshit. Every now and then you still hear about it.
And it's, I guess, still happening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still happening. So the guy that like created this school, and I won't make Archie freak out and look up the dude's name, even though I already forgot what it was. George Wilder or somebody. he wanted it to be this way. He purposely, like, it. He was just horrible.
It's George W. Miles.
I mean, I was close.
Yeah,
I had,
that was good.
I had the George and the W right.
Yeah, that was, and the Isles.
So obviously there were many runaways, kids that were just like, I can't deal with this anymore. It also had a maintenance man named Donald, who also went by the name, the nickname Smokey. This gentleman was a homosexual pedophile and had raped and killed at least one of the boys, potentially more, but one that they know of. So that was it as a school, one that I would never send my child to. Now, as the hospital, it doesn't get better. As we all know, Archie kind of touched on that. But Arch, like you said, you know, we know, and we have actually covered it all on this podcast, lobotomies, insulin coma therapy, electric shock therapy.
Don't forget the ice pick.
Oh, yeah. Well, lobotomies, yeah, yeah. this place would also mummify people with ice water wrapped sheets or drenched sheets. They would wrap them in these sheets and leave them.
Oh yes. The hydrotherapy.
Yeah. Strapped to beds for days upon days. They would also leave them in hot water baths, unable to get out. And they would also shoot ice water at them with fire hoses. So that was a new one. I was like, oh, I haven't seen that twist in the old snake. Okay.
Yeah. The shock therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the hydrotherapy.
Yeah. Have you guys ever seen Nurse Ratched on Netflix with Sarah Paulson?
I love her. I haven't watched it though.
No. I haven't watched it.
You really should. It's really phenomenal. And of course, everything she does is phenomenal. She's, you know, could read the phone book and I'd be like, wow, that was amazing. But there's a scene in it where the doctor orders the nurses to put them in a scalding hot bath. Like they keep turning the temperature on in the water. And it's a very disturbing scene. It's a very, very disturbing scene. But then it's because you know that that actually did happen to people. It was unbelievable. Yeah. But it's a fabulous show. I recommend it to both of you and everybody listening.
This is horrific. It will change you. Please watch it.
Please watch it. Exactly.
Sarah Paulson always picks the most uplifting things to do, by the way.
Always.
Hey, she was in Ocean's 8.
Okay. Yes. Which and she's also very just nice to look at all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah Paulson.
Ocean's 8 is one of my favorite movies. I love a good heist movie, and they did too. That to perfection.
Yeah.
I mean, and Sarah Paulson. She makes my lesbian heart skip a beat.
Even when she's doing horrible, terrible things to people as Nurse Ratched.
Don't care. I would sign up.
Right.
Don't kink shame.
I'd pick one for the team.
Right. Don't kink shame.
Exactly, Archie. I'm like, whatever. Yeah, I'm down. Oh my God. I'll take it.
Okay. My God. Okay.
You knew what you were getting into.
I absolutely did.
You can't bring up Sarah Paulson and not expect me to be like, yeah, she's nice.
She's got nice bone structure.
Even Archie's like, she's pretty nice.
She's pretty
hot. She's a changer. She's on the level.
Oh my God.
She'll make you turn your head no matter who you are. You're going to be whiplash.
Oh, God.
Isn't that amazing? I think that's amazing. Anyway, so the hospital. It's a terrible, awful place, and Sarah Paulson doesn't actually work there, so let's focus back to this.
Fine, you're bumming me out, but let's go. Sarah Paulson was the highlight of our happiness. Back to the dungeon.
Yeah,
here's Carrie bringing us back to point.
Look, I'm not about fun, guys. I'm about torture and death and horror.
All right, back to the sadness.
Pay extra for that, just saying.
Oh my God. Speaking of torture and death and horror, it had so many deaths that it actually had to build its own on-site morgue. I was like, oh, lovely.
Oh, well, yeah.
Numerous documented suicides. So here we go again. First, a bunch of suicides in the building as a school, now as a hospital. The third floor had an area where the most extreme and dangerous of the mentally ill were housed, as well as an outside caged area called the birdcage, where they could go and get limited outside activity.
Oh, this doesn't sound like it's going to end well.
It's not. In 1980, they had to expand the place to keep up with newer facilities. So there was like a construction area where they were like expanding and adding buildings. And on June 28th, 1980, Gina Renee Hall left a bar with a man named Stephen Epperly, and she was never seen again. This would be the first murder case in Virginia state history where there was a murder conviction without a corpse. Yeah. So there's many theories as to how this guy disposed of her body. She was thrown in the New River, et cetera, things like that. But one of the more prevailing ones revolves around St. Albans itself. So he was a construction worker on the site, and his job was to pour gravel for the foundations. Her bloody clothes were found around town, but her car was found on the property of the sanatorium about 100 yards from the construction site. They had enough evidence to put him away for her murder, which, like I said, ended up being the very first case in the history of the United States of a successful prosecution without a body. So.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Tiny shining star in the whole terrible story.
I guess there were lots of witnesses.
I think it was a lot of circumstantial evidence that, I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it. And I'm actually kind of wondering if maybe My Favorite Murder didn't cover this. I don't know.
That might
be. I mean, they must have had something physical tying him to her bloody mm-hmm. clothes, usually, for something like that to happen.
Yeah. They had to have something.
Right. Yeah. But it does seem pretty plausible that he was a killer.
Yeah. Nonetheless, it is believed that her body is buried somewhere on that property. So, the hauntings. Let's get into the hauntings. That's enough for the horrible, awful things that happened there. That poor kid. Oh, God. And the yearbook thing. Oh, I just hate it all. And the baby. I hate it all. Okay. Oh, wait, I forgot. I just remembered there's more horrible things in the hauntings. I'm sorry, guys. Okay.
Does that go through all of this? Meant to like refill?
I'm good. If you guys would like to take a moment. Yes, time to bring everything down. Actually, before we bring everything down, while we were on the break, I wanted to look up that murder of Gina Renee Hall. And there's an article online from WDBJ7.com about her murder, actually. It was actually published last July in 2020. They have started to find parts of her body. So,
oh, God.
Oh, wow.
It's been 40 years. I know. It's been 40 years since she was murdered. Stephen Epperly was convicted, but a body was never found. However, her sister has never really given up the search. And with the help of a forensic anthropologist, Hay Bones, out of Tennessee, they have found some of Gina's DNA and remains. So I guess just a real quick overview of this article. I guess there is this farmer's grandson reported to the Radford Police Department that his family had held a secret since 1980. He said that his grandfather had witnessed what he believed to be two men dismembering a body in Meadow Creek, and they were driving a white van, and he believed the woman to be Gina Hall. So that is what sparked her sister to look for this body. So this forensic anthropologist had invented an instrument to detect DNA buried beneath the surface of the ground. Since then, Gina's remains have been discovered across 8 locations throughout the New River Valley using that device. They have found Gina's DNA on top of Draper Mountain at a lake house on Claytor Lake, off Hazel Hollow Road along Meadow Creek, and they found part of one of Gina's bones at Epperly's former hunting grounds.
So, parts.
Parts.
Ugh.
Wow.
Yeah, so not only did it hit on find her DNA, but it also hit on another, that there was another missing woman, Angela Radar. She went missing from Roanoke in 1977. And back then they thought she was just a runaway. So yeah, as always, especially back then. So I guess that's a little bit of sunshine in this horrible, horrible story. She was probably murdered on the grounds of or around the center. Because like I said, her car was found 100 yards from the building. So she was probably murdered there, taken somewhere else to be, you know, what happened after that. But I'm glad that they're, you know, her family's getting closure and they're starting to find so they can give her like a proper burial and stuff. But
I agree. That's probably really so healing for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about something happier, like hauntings. So this place has a couple of, this place has names for certain hotspots throughout it. The first one I want to talk about is Muffin Man Hallway. And
I'm already in. So in.
So Muffin Man Hallway is apparently on the first floor past the King Center entrance. The nickname comes from St. Albans volunteer Jenny Johnston. 1 year during a Halloween haunted fundraiser for the hospital, she dressed as a bloody Muffin Man. And event visitors reported not only seeing the Muffin Man chase them through the halls, but other spectral spooks as well. Difference is that the Muffin Man that they saw in this costume wasn't this Jenny Johnston, but a doppelganger of her. Which I don't love a doppelganger. That's never a good sign.
I love everything about this. Go on.
So it's also said that there's a singing spirit named Elizabeth, and then a darker, more menacing entity called the Grumpy Old Man that are present in the same area.
Oh, that must be future me.
Singing spirit. That's Carrie and Archie.
Less future, more present, but go on.
Right. EVPs, phantom footsteps, loud bangs, heavy feelings, intriguing ghost box chatter, and EMF detectors all light up on several occasions when you go and investigate these places. There was one group that they had experience with their SB7, which is the spirit box that we've got, Archie, the little red one, the radio thing that we used at the hospital.
Okay. Yeah.
So apparently not only did it seem that there were separate voices of Elizabeth and this cantankerous grumpy old man, but the hallway's visibility would alter depending on who was coming through the SB7 at the time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't it? Yeah. So like it would be a little bit lighter when she was coming through and then a little darker when he was. Plus, they were able to tell their distinctive personalities through the communication. The grumpy old man liked to cuss, bully, and mock and laugh at them.
Archie, then, go on.
Archie. And then Elizabeth, she sang, and she enjoyed. So then I don't know if they caught her singing on like an EVP or if they caught her singing coming through the SB7, but... So they decided to sing Blue Suede Shoes to her. And she seemed to really enjoy that because then the old guy tried to get control, like talk over her on the SB7. And she seemed to kind of reprimand him. And they caught all this on the ghost, on the spirit box.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So we got to talk about Donald, the pedophile guy. So he tends to prefer males, and he's the most active around this particular closet on one of the floors. And it's not known if this was like his workspace or if this is where he'd take young boys. Nobody really knows, but that he's more active around this one particular closet. And it's very evident that he wants males to sit in the closet and talk to him. So one group that had gone to investigate this place had 4 to 5 men in their group. And the men all spent about 30 seconds in the closet, each. And while they didn't hear anything when they were asking him questions, they did capture EVPs of Donald saying each of their names individually as they were in the closet. And they never once were like calling to each other or spoke their names, but he knew what their names were.
That's creepy as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another group, their approach with Donald started off, they had actually had a retired police detective with them in their group. And this police detective tried to get a confession out of Donald about the rape and murder of the one child using the ghost box. And they said, which from our video, you can distinctly hear what we perceive as a success, but I had so little time, I didn't get a chance to look at the video. I was running late getting my notes done, so I didn't get to listen to the video, but they seem to, you know, hear what they perceive as a confession. And they said, she goes, after that, things got weird. And I was like, okay, you just got a confession from a killer, but then things are weird after that. All right. So they started playing this little game with Donald that the author calls, she's like, we started playing with this game with Donald that I'll call, quote, you light up my periscope, I'll get into your closet with you, you homicidal ghost. She's all, lengthy title, I know. Parker Brothers may or may not go for it. But anyway, that's exactly what happened. So I guess all the guys in the room took turns talking to Donald and getting into this closet. And Donald would respond by lighting up the EMF detector. And then he would also like interact with them using the ghost box, the spirit box. He even called one investigator Biscuit after the investigator flippantly told Donald that he wouldn't get into his closet unless he called him Big Baby Biscuit.
Oh,
so oh, nice. Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, wow, that's really unique. Like, that is one of those situations that Tony and Cherie and Chris and Audra and Ron and Lourdes are constantly talking about, where you give them something really innocuous, and then if you get that back on the spirit box, the odds that it happened to scan a station every quarter of a second and you just picked up that very word, Biscuit, like, is the odds are so minute. So I thought that was pretty freaking interesting.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So there was another group of women were trying to goad Donald into asking if he just couldn't handle women. And when one of them noticed a shadowy figure watching them, it was standing in the corner watching them and then disappeared as soon as they noticed it. It was like the shadowy figure of a man. Eventually, they seemed to capture him pacing back and forth between two EMF detectors that were lighting up. Like, they were kind of blocking the doorway, and it almost looked like he was trying to get to the closet. They were blocking that closet. And it was like he was trying to get, by the way, the EMF detectors were lighting up. It was really pretty crazy.
Yep. Don't fuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. So from Jenny Hyatt, she was the blog that I read. She wrote, quote, on the ghost box, it didn't take long for us to begin getting interaction, but it seemed as if the spirits were fighting amongst each other, as if the room was full with entities. One of the most obvious battle was what we believed was to be the ghost of Gina, perhaps with Smokey. So she would answer questions that we posed, such as, what is your favorite color? And we got the definitive answer, wine. And I was like, see, that's my girl. My favorite color is wine too.
she whatever color the wine is, it's fine.
Whatever, I mean, I just love it. She continues, as the questions continued, we suddenly heard a male voice and then the sound of a female voice say, I have to go. At which time silence ensued. The continued burst of coldness affected all of us up until we left to return upstairs. So these are very interactive spirits that are in this place.
Very highly.
And they all sound intelligent too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There is a room called the whistling room, which if you whistle in the room, you'll get a different whistle in response, which I don't
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's, I've never heard of that before.
Not an experience I'll get to have.
You can't whistle?
Can't whistle.
Really? How come I'm just finding this out now?
Well, I mean, I can whistle in. But.
So you can't blow.
I can't blow.
Okay. Don't put that on your scruff profile. There is also an alcoholics ward. And in this ward are full-bodied apparitions and the sounds of clinking. Which I was like, love it. It's great. I can go when I die.
I have some place to go.
Yeah. We're there, Arch. Cheers, clink.
Cheers.
So, again, all the classics are here. All the classics are here. Shadow figures, whispers, growls, door slamming, loud bangs. Some people have actually been thrown down the stairs by nothing, which is... Throw me down the stairs.
I mean, if this is the alcoholics ward, were they thrown down the stairs or did they fall down the stairs?
This is a different area.
Somebody just say that their favorite color was wine.
This is a different area. We're out of the alcoholics ward. This is a different area. This is just general things that happen. They also have a bowling alley there that they put in to reward the patients that were doing well. One of the patient's daughters died down there, so she and another girl who is believed to be Gina are seen and felt down there. In addition, there is also a malevolent presence down there as well. So when I watched Destination Fear, they went there. And Dakota Layden and his sister, so it's his show. And then he goes around, you guys know the premise, him, his sister, and his two friends, they go around in a RV and they go to the scariest places in the world or in the country. And they go in, they do a little investigation, and then they spend the night in the location and they face their fears. That's the whole premise of the show. So in this bowling alley, they had been there 4 years prior, and Chelsea was in the bowling alley by herself. And what they do is they pick a different area, either each spend the night alone in a different area of wherever they're at. Chelsea happened to be in the bowling alley in this one. And she woke up to the sound of thumping. And when she sat up, there was this dark shadow figure rushing at her. And she screamed so bad, she quit. And she ended up leaving the night. She didn't make it through the night. So 4 years later, when Dakota gets this show on the Travel Channel, he goes and he brings her back there.
Oh, what an asshole.
Yeah, like a brother does. And this time, Dakota was down in there. He picked the bowling alley. And he had crazy experiences too. Loud bangs, knocks. If he asked for a knock, I think like he asked for a knock and he got it. There were a couple of times where, hang on. Leia is like dreaming the dream of a lifetime. She's barking in her dream and running in her dream.
Oh.
I keep hearing this like squeak. And I'm like, Jada, shut up. And I look and it's Leia.
I heard the squeak too.
Did you? It was Leia. Yeah. She's dreaming. So anyway, that was kind of their experience in the bowling alley. Now, here's where another terrible thing I'm going to talk about. The suicide bathroom. So there's this bathroom in the building. Yep. You know about it?
Yep.
Yeah. So 4 suicides happened in this bathroom. Two were hangings. One was a drowning, I think. And then one was a woman who was pregnant and lost the baby. She was in such grief that she kept the child in a jar in her room.
Before oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Are we just glossing over this?
Yeah. I was kind of hoping.
Okay, good. Okay.
Let's do that. Yeah. Before eventually going into this bathroom and committing suicide by breaking the mirror and trying to swallow the glass.
Now I get why we're glossing over it. Go on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
I told you, this is all terrible and horrible.
Well, I'm always surprised.
Carrie, I hope one day you just get all the horrible out in the beginning, but no, you dole it out for dramatic effect.
I am Ned Flanders. All right, I'm sorry. Please continue.
So many women in particular tend to feel overwhelming grief and sadness in this area of the hospital. There was one woman that was with a professional group that had investigated St. Albans many times. And on one of her first times there, she was weighted down with a tremendous amount of grief and depression. So after she researched Rebecca, she went back to the very same bathroom and she brought flowers and she talked to this Rebecca. She apologized for her loss and said that she couldn't keep bearing the weight of her pain anymore. She knew it was coming from her. And it was in Destination Fears episode. She started to cry and begged the spirit to release her from this. And I can't remember if she felt something had touched her or if she felt like cold or something happened, but almost immediately after she begged her to release her from this emotional torment, the emotional pain was gone.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So in this area, equipment will be moved while left up there to run. Again, shadow figures, EVPs, bangs. It's not great. And I think it's interesting that there are places in this building that will affect men and women differently. That the entities there are like, I find that really fascinating. I don't think we've ever covered a location like that before. So there's also the boiler room. And this room, a few women were raped down there and two were killed when it was open as a hospital. So because of that and the entities that are down there, women are not allowed by the owner to go down there alone at all. Like, he specifically tells teams, this, you can't.
Don't. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. There's an angry spirit that will antagonize and assault them.
Interesting. I totally want to do it now.
Right.
It's like, as soon as you can tell me I can't do it, I'm like,
I'm gonna have to do this. So
I think it's part of being like a skeptic too. I'm like, if that's the most,
yeah, I think so.
Place that I can go, like,
fucked up place. Rebel Channel USA, give us our own show.
I mean, we can send Laura to the really awful parts.
As long as it's not claustrophobic, I'm fine. Like, is it like a cave or something? Like, I don't, but the rest of it, I don't care.
Yeah.
And like, my only other concern would be bugs. Like, that's actually, bugs and rodents be my main concern, and then I'd be worried about the ghosts. But yeah. Oh, I'm fine.
She ran screaming out, but only because there were rats in there.
Oh.
I see it.
Probably, yeah.
Not because the ghost was trying to rape, but because there were rats and bugs.
Right? Yeah.
Right, like a cockroach comes near, like that.
I'm there with you.
That you had when you talked about how you felt like a crawling under your leg, but it wasn't actually a bug. Like, mm-hmm. I would have fucking been running. Like, if I really thought there was a cockroach crawling on my leg, I would have been running and screaming and pulling off my clothes. Like, nope. I lost my fucking mind.
Somebody set my leg on fire, please.
And if somebody was like, there was a ghost touching her leg, I'd be like, oh, cool. Like, I would be totally okay.
Right? Oh, thank God.
The cockroach? Yeah. Like, but the cockroach? No, fuck no. I'm out. Running, stripping, burning my clothes, burning, setting myself on fire. Like,
I'm the same way. I swear to God, I'm the same exact way. Down here also in the boiler room, one group apparently sprayed luminol on the floor. We know what luminol is, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
So one group sprayed.
It makes blood and stuff
light up.
Visible.
Under a black light. Yeah.
Bodily secretions.
Yes.
All the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff. So they sprayed luminol on the floor and it lit up what looked to be a giant puddle with what looked like something had been drugged through it.
Oh.
Yes. It should be
my kind of party.
Yeah, it should be noted that luminol also reacts to a bunch of different natural stuff. Like, it can react to like potatoes and, you know, other stuff. So there, I can't imagine that there was a giant puddle of potatoes on the floor that somebody, you know. God,
this woman was
You're clearly not Irish.
Look at all the evidence. She was murdered with potatoes.
With potatoes, exactly. So some other occurrences that have happened at St. Albans from the Paraholics site that I looked at, or the blog. The author writes, plus, I purposefully did not divulge anything of what's behind the padlocked door in the upstairs wing of the hospital. And there's a picture of the door next to the suicide bathroom. But if you go, I beg you not make the same mistake that we made by knocking on that door. And that's all I can say. Now I got to knock on the door.
Right? You're exactly the same way.
But it's
I can't go down there. I totally want to go down there. Let's do that.
But it's a padlocked door. And they knocked on it. So sounds of walking, laughing, and daily business can be heard going on in the nurses' quarters. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
Well. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Keep this in.
God.
Dear Lord.
The door creaked so bad. I was terrified.
You went, like, out of your seat in a second. Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. Oh, my God. So good. You fucking jumped so high.
The live studio audience is fucking fired. Okay, so brief reset after I got the bejesus scared out of me by my mother, and much to Archie and Laura's hilarity.
It was the best thing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, anyway.
It was funny.
I was deep into my story. So Jenny Hyatt, the blog that I had mentioned, she said, quote, but beyond the light, turning darkened corners, I felt the presence. We all did. You could almost smell it in the air. These walls were watching us. So a couple of mediums that have been through there, one said that she had visited the place and there are so many layers and layers of spirits all over the building. Another said that she could feel them pressing into the walls to stay away from her as she walked down the hallways. So almost like it was a crowd, like just crowded with spirits. She was having to like navigate her way through. People have felt their pant legs tugged on. They hear shuffling and footsteps down hallways, which I think that that would be a really terrifying sound to hear shuffling down a hallway, like only to follow the sound and then hear it again directly behind them. Mists are common occurrence in photos taken at the sanitarium, terrium.
At this point.
I know, a sanitarium is for tuberculosis healing. A sanatorium is a mental institution, sorry. So the Destination Fear team was actually warned by this group that it was the woman that had those heavy emotional feelings from the suicide bathroom. They were warned by this group to keep their wits about them and to trust their gut, that many of the spirits there feed off of fear. And if they get the sense that they need to get out of a room or a place inside, to listen to it and go immediately. Yep. So on... On this episode of Destination Fear, it was kind of crazy because Dakota had asked for a sign that somebody was there and he got touched on the shoulder, leaving a dusty handprint on the back of his hoodie, like on his shoulder in the back. He didn't feel it at the time, but when he turned around, everybody was like, dude, someone touched you. They kept hearing bangs and crashes in opposite places from where they were. And when I was watching it, it kind of seemed like the spirits were trying to separate them. It was kind of crazy, which was made worse when they all spent the night alone on separate floors, which is basically the entire premise of the show. They go and investigate and like all the hot spots and the worst, they write them all down on a piece of paper and then they each pick out one where they have to spend the night at. So I was like, this place doesn't seem the best. So in their closing of the show, they all admitted that the place seemed to feed on their fear, that you could just tell that this more scared they got, the more activity they got. But again, that could be one of those, you know, power of suggestion things, like they were already scared. So maybe every tiny little creak or whatever. So, yeah, this one was a hard one for me to research just because the history was so disturbing on a vast number of levels. It genuinely seems to me like a very unsafe and scary place. And it is one that me and my team, Southern Entities Paranormal, are going to be investigating this summer. So I have reached out to the owner and to find out their open times, and we're going to book that. Yeah. So they are closed for regular tours. They're normal, like historical and daytime type ghost tours due to COVID, which I know you're sick of hearing and I'm sick of saying. they are offering private paranormal investigations. They do have to limit it to 8 or less, again, because of COVID. Yeah. So that's it, guys. That's what I've got for the hauntings and the ghosts and the horrific crap at St. Albans Sanatorium. In my note before you go, they're located at 6248 University Park Drive in Radford, Virginia, 24141. You can, if you want to inquire about a private paranormal investigation, you can email them at info@stalbans-virginia.com, or you can call them at 540-260-3111. So my Saturday, my weekends are quickly filling up in the summer and into the fall with Southern Entities. Now that I'm here in North Carolina, we're really getting up and running. So we're doing the old college hospital. We're going to be doing this location. We have another really huge location to announce toward the end of the summer that we're going to wait and hold off on announcing. That's going to be a really, really tremendous one. We've got a lot of guest investigators that are joining us that I'm very excited about. Yeah. And then we have, we've already started making plans for our 100th episode. So the announcements are going to come out about that. Yeah. That's coming up in October, but we got to start planning because, you know, Carrie's always go big or go home. And we are going very, very big with this one. So, yeah. What'd you guys think?
No, that was great.
I think this place seems really, really interesting. Mostly, I really enjoyed that the ghosts seem to really fuck with everybody.
Yes. Like, some
of it's really passive. You know, this one is like, they are in your, like, it seems like they're in your face, like, 24/7. Like, there's no interaction that you talked about that was like, oh, you know, we just saw them on the staircase. No, it's like, hey, they were, like, pushing us downstairs. They were fucking with us in the other room.
Yeah.
Making us,
yeah, it's
not alley. Like, it was aggressive. Yeah, it was, it's very
aggressive,
right? It was a dark shadow running at you, you know. It's not your run-of-the-mill, maybe
kind of subtle, like, hauntings,
yeah, you know. Yeah. Like maybe a pattern haunting, you know, like somebody patterns of their life, or, you know, something they had lived before,
like the residual one. yeah
the residual, sorry. But this one, it seems like it's very, like the interactive, aggressive. It's basically my 7-year-old, but as a ghost.
It pulls on my pant legs, pushes me down the stairs.
Do you have Legos? I don't know.
Right? It's terrible. It seems
really cool. I love it.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a very unsafe and scary place. Like, as always, guys, I'm always saying it. If you want to investigate a location, absolutely do it, but don't go by yourself.
And make sure you can legally actually be there.
Yes, don't trespass. You know, a lot of these locations are more than willing to rent out the space for you and your friends if you want to go and investigate. And they've also offered professional ghost tours if you want to do that. But yeah, don't go by yourself for a number of reasons. You never know about squatters. You never know who's there that's broken in, that shouldn't be there. The living are always much more dangerous to a paranormal investigator than the dead. But this place, ghosts are not, yep, they're not,
you
that
have
great
a question mark about that.
I've got a question mark about the ghosts. The ghosts are not super great. So anyway, yeah, that was it. That was St. Albans Sanatorium. And fun fact, I'm going to end it on a fun fact that I just recently learned. Our friend Matt Haas of Strange Oddities podcast, they were actually hosting an EnigmaCon at St. Albans tonight. This weekend, it's going on at St. Albans. So he just posted a picture. I was looking at Facebook on our break, and he just posted a picture of everybody there on that main staircase.
Good.
Yeah, so they're doing an EnigmaCon at St. Albans this weekend, and he had actually asked us if we could go, but I was like, oh yeah, we're in the middle of our move. Like, I knew we wouldn't be able to.
Does that mean we're a week late?
We are late, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Damn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's a really fascinating place. I'm going to have to find the courage to go to this place to investigate it, because it just sounds really, really scary. But I know Chris is really looking forward to it. And that Donald ghost, he's going to be like, bring it, pal, try. You know, I just know Chris is just one of those. He's not scared of anything. So yeah, again, as always, Arch, do you want to close us out and let the peeps know where they can find us?
Oh God, no. I don't know. We are everywhere. You can find us as at HOH Podcast on fucking Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
The TikTok. Yeah.
Stitcher, Spotify.
Right.
All of the places.
All of the
your mom's literally. House.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. Sephora for the best mascara. I mean, literally everywhere.
We're literally going to get Dior blackout. It's happening. Go on.
You're there too.
Exactly. Yeah. Over hill, over dale. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you liked it. We're really sorry. We probably should have put a disclaimer in about some of the really more horrific things that we talked about. And I may actually insert that during the editing. I may insert a disclaimer just because some of the stuff we talked about was pretty gnarly and kind of trigger warning. That being said,
that would be a good idea.
Yeah. That being said, as always, guys, particularly after this episode, stay safe out there, because you never know who
or what
is listening.
Yay. All right, we love you. We will see you again next week at the brand new location. We know you're going to love it. And that's all for us. We hope you have a great night. Bye.
Take care, friends.
Bye.